on a roll.
Yeah, now you can.
Okay. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to The Future is Bright? I am Lindsay.
I'm Bridget.
It's Thursday.
It's Thursday, my dudes.
Thursday before a long weekend for a holiday.
Well, the 4th of July. Not for me.
So. Oh, you work on... Are you working Saturday and Sunday?
Saturday, Sunday, and Monday.
And Monday?
Yep.
Oof, that sucks.
I mean...
Making money.
I don't give a shit. I don't do anything anyway.
That's true.
I think Thursday, like, Jimmy's going out with his friends.
Thursday? Tonight?
I mean, Sunday.
Oh.
And I'm like, you go.
Did you see that thing I sent you? The Snapchat? Where because it's my birthday, it's,
yeah.
The Nutty Irishman was like...
I was like, bring 25 people.
I was like, what the fuck? 25
lucky,
people.
Lucky I know five.
Yeah. And one of my friends... I think it was Angie from high school. She said, when you turned 21, you had 25 friends. I said, that was fucking 4 years ago, and now I have three.
Like, three total.
Like,
yeah.
No.
Yeah,
But, yeah, so I'm not doing anything either. Ronnie said he was going to take me to the beach for my birthday.
When?
On my birthday.
Oh, shit.
Which is, he doesn't, again, it's a holiday weekend. Last time he took me to the beach, he wanted to take me to the beach, was also a holiday weekend. Yeah. So... And he was going to take me to the aquarium
Saturday. Is he okay?
He knows it's my birthday, so.
Cute.
But it's supposed to rain on Saturday, so he doesn't want
to
take me.
It is supposed to rain on Saturday.
Because he feels like the aquarium would be kind of silly to go in the rain.
Yeah, there is an outside portion.
That's where the penguins are, and the seals, and that's where all the fun is.
And the otters.
So, we might not do that.
Yeah.
We might go see the Minion movie.
See. You don't want to see.
I will see, but, like, it's not, like, one of the ones where I'm, like...
I want to see.
You know? Like, I'm, like, I would be fine if we don't go.
Yeah. I get that. But I'm not a big Minion guy.
He's got to get his Ron views. So...
I saw his one for the phone.
Yeah, he liked that one.
Yeah.
I don't know if... Have I seen him since?
I don't know.
But we liked... What's the last one I saw with him?
Jurassic World?
No. Was it Buzz?
Maybe.
Yeah, that one was good.
I thought it was really good.
It was really good.
I thought it was good. I don't know why people were so mad about it.
Yeah, I don't know why. I think they were expecting it to be a Toy Story movie.
Right,
and it
but
wasn't.
But there's no grounds for you to be mad at it then, because, like...
Buzz deserves his own movie, too.
Not even that, but, like, it literally said in the beginning of the movie, like, in 1995, Andy got a toy, and this is the movie that, like, he watched in order to want to get that toy. Like, it explained to you what it was.
100%. Like, sorry, I remember the movie. It was Elvis.
But, how was that?
It was good. I mean, it was good, but, like, it was just, like, his life, so it wasn't, like...
Yeah.
And how he was swindled from his manager. If you didn't know that, he was swindled by his manager.
I did not.
Out of all his money.
My grandma really liked Elvis.
Really?
Yeah.
It was a good movie. Do you know who played Elvis?
Austin Butler.
He played a really good Elvis.
Did he? Yeah. I heard that he was really good at it.
Yeah, he was good, yeah. Yeah. I don't know why we started talking about movies, but anyway. should I jump into this case? Because last week going to be the one where we talked for literally 40 minutes before we jumped into anything. Yes, so.
Well, technically you go first, so this is going to come before that one.
Okay, well, next week we talk for approximately 40 minutes before we start.
I literally started, it was like 18 minutes.
Like, legitimately, I start the episode by reading a Brian Laundrie death
literally
note.
Quote.
So, there we go.
Word for word what Brian Laundrie said in his diary.
It's fine. He was an asshole. Anyway.
Accurate.
So, today I'm going to discuss the murder of Sherry, I'm really bad pronouncing names, Rasmussen, which sounds like that's how you would say it.
Okay.
so, she was 27 and engaged to a man named John Rutten, which she met him, like, around 1984.
Mm-hmm.
She was a graduate student of Loma... Oh, I thought he died. I thought that was it.
I think it was eating.
I think...
The opposite of death.
Yeah, it's fine. We're watching Oscar the Oscar fish try to eat.
Oscar the Oscar fish.
So, she was a graduate of Loma Linda University and was, on a fast career track in critical care nursing. She entered college at 16, and by her late 20s, she was the director of nursing at Glendale Adventist Medical Center in, like, California, giving presentations and teaching classes to her fellow nurses.
That's interesting.
So she was, like, a nurse, but, like, did more, like, teaching than, okay, like, anything else.
Yeah.
So now I'm just gonna hop right into how she died. And, yeah.
Okay. Hop on.
So, on February 24th, 1986, in the morning, John was leaving the couple's condo, on Balboa Boulevard in Van Nuys. Really bad at that. He was going to work, and Sherry was scheduled to give a motivational speech at work, and that was, like, a managerial tactic that she didn't really feel, like, was effective, so she kind of didn't really want to do it.
Okay.
So, to avoid it, she told John that she might call in sick, so she was gonna use, like, a back injury that she had, like, sure, that she had, like, had, sorry, had gotten the day before as an excuse as to, like, why she didn't want to go to work.
Okay.
At 9:45 a.m., a neighbor noticed that their garage door was open, but there was no car visible, so somebody left and whatever.
Yeah.
Approximately 15 minutes later, John made his first of several unanswered calls to their home over the course of the day. So he just, like, I guess calling to check on her, and right, she didn't. Sherry's sister also called, but the nobody answered.
Mm-hmm.
At noon, two men who the neighbor believed were gardeners in the condo area complex,
okay, yeah,
gave her and her husband a purse that they had found, which turned out to be Sherry's purse. And a maid cleaning in a nearby unit said that she had heard something that sounded like two people fighting, and then something falling at around 12:30 p.m. So that's, like, around when everything kind of got a little.
Mm-hmm.
But then when John returned home from work that evening, he found his garage door open and broken glass in the driveway. In addition, he found the BMW that he bought Sherry as an engagement gift was missing. So the car wasn't there.
Right.
Because of Sherry's morning plans, he found it strange that she would have gone out without letting him know, because she wouldn't have not gone to work and then gone out.
And then
out.
Just gone, like, somewhere.
Like, yeah. Me. If I, like, said I was sick and, like, not going to work, I would not leave the house because I would be afraid that I would run into someone.
That's
from
what
work.
I...
Like, but when I worked at a supermarket, I would, like, and I would call out sick, I legitimately would not leave my house because I would be so afraid.
Well, you also live really close,
right,
to it.
Right. Like, now I never really ever call out, but, like, I don't live in the general area, so,
I always,
like,
get, like, so bad. Even if I'm, like, I could be dying,
right, like,
in
I could
bed,
be actually
I'm like, oh my
sick.
God, like,
yeah, like, yeah. So I can understand, like, where she was coming from with that. Okay, now I gotta...
See, you lose your spot, yeah, easier on there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the house's answering machine had not been activated. So that sounds weird to us, like, now in 2022, but, like, back then, every single time you would,
like,
leave
the
80s, house.
Right?
Yeah, it was 1986.
Okay.
Yeah. So when you would leave the house, you would activate the answering machine. So
you had to activate the answering
machine. Like, I guess, like, just turn it on. So, like.
Yeah, that's so weird.
Yeah.
But okay. Yeah, no, I
so,
believe that. I
yeah.
can get behind that.
So he found it weird that nobody, like, that it wasn't activated because they both would have activated
right.
before they left. Inside, John found Sherry dead on the living room floor, shot three times. There were signs of a struggle, such as a porcelain vase that had been a vase?
I say vase. But...
Vase, that's, okay. That had been apparently broken over her head prior to the shooting. And there was a bloody handprint next to the panic button, so they must have had, like, a burglar panic button.
Yeah.
It appeared somebody had attempted to at least bind Sherry. She had defensive wounds and a bruise on her face that had appeared to be inflicted by the muzzle of the gun.
Oh, like, so, like, he, like...
Right.
She.
Right.
Her.
Right. The gun had been fired through a quilted blanket apparently to muffle the sound, obviously. And it was also observed that there was a bite mark on Sherry's arm. The LAPD detectives investigating the case quickly concluded that Sherry had been surprised by and killed by a burglar. They said that Sherry's attire, which was a bathrobe, a nightgown, and underwear, suggested that she was not expecting visitors. Although a maid in a neighboring unit reported hearing screaming, like I said, she did not recall hearing any gunshots, obviously, because it was silenced, but whatever. And she thought the whole event had been a domestic dispute, so she didn't call the police. It had appeared that the perpetrator had been in the process of taking electrical equipment because there was, like, a stack of, like, phones or something, like, next to her body.
So that was just, like...
So they said that they were in the process of it.
Like,
but,
doing something, yeah.
But as a result, everything else was left behind. Like, jewelry, all that other stuff was left behind. And the vehicle was taken as a getaway car. An abandoned BMW was recovered a week later, but it yielded no evidence. The only thing that had appeared to have been taken from the couple, from the home, was the couple's marriage license. So, like, they were already, yeah. Lead Detective Lyle Mayer did consider other possibilities rather than just, like, you know, a burglary. He quickly ruled out her her fiance slash, I'm going to say, like, slash husband because they had the marriage license, but whatever. he had quit his job and moved away quickly, like, shortly after the murder, and he was, like, very, like, grieving.
Whoa.
Makes sense. Yeah, he was quickly ruled out. But... The police remained focused on the possibility of a burglary, especially in light of the fact that there was one reported in the same area.
So they just thought this was, like, a burglary, like, gone wrong,
basically? Right, right. So they thought it was a burglary gone wrong because of the fact that one was reported in the same area, in which one of the two reported suspects had been carrying a gun, possibly a .38 caliber, like the one that had fired three bullets into Sherry.
So like, they had, like, reason to believe.
Right. Yeah. I had to like think about that sentence, like, because it didn't make sense to me. But yeah. So the other detective on the case, Steve Hooks, found the bite mark quite unusual, because bite marks during struggles are much more commonly inflicted by women. While the majority of burglars are men, however, because men have bitten opponents during fights, the burglary theory still stood.
That's interesting.
Yeah. I mean, it makes sense that, like, women are more... Oh, I would bite the fuck out of somebody, right, I would do the same thing. It makes sense that they're, like, questioning it, but... the suspected burglars to whom the detectives, ascribed the crime, like, remained at large, obviously, for a very long time. And then 8 months later, there was a news article that went up and a reward offered by Sherry's family. So, like, it took 8 months and the suspects were still at large.
8 months?
Oh, it took longer than that, but...
Oh. Shit. Is she the only one that got, like, this is,
yeah,
like, serial?
Yeah, she was the only one that was killed.
Okay.
The LAPD was preoccupied with violence resulting from gang wars and the crack epidemic at the time, so they're unable to put as much attention to the case.
As, like... Well, I guess it kind of, like...
Right, because during that time, it was, like...
Makes sense.
Yeah.
But this is, like, you said, late 80s.
1986, yeah.
So.
Sherry's family said that detectives in the Van Nuys office were often unhelpful, when the family called, they would hang up on them and put them on hold for, like, a very long time. A year after the murder, the frustrated family reiterated their offer at a press conference, and they called for more action, and detectives And when her father, because he was, like, the one who got, like, very involved.
Yeah.
When he, like, tried to offer, like, who he thought could have done it, and I'll go into, like, who he thinks it was.
Okay.
They told him he, quote, watched too much television. And so, but he didn't back down. He continued to publicize the reward and later worked with the, with a short-lived television show called Murder One.
Which so he literally worked on the television show.
Right, which created a segment inspired by the case.
Okay. He really took that sentence, like, and fucking was
Let's do it.
Yeah, I do.
Right. His name was Nels. So, in particular, Nels. He was unconvinced that Sherry, who had been 6 feet tall and had a large frame and was in good shape, had been a victim of a botched burglary. He thought it would have been a struggle for anyone to subdue her in a close quarters. And one of the detectives had told him at one point that the events may have even lasted an hour and a half. And he thought that that was a long time for burglars, because they would want to get in and out, obviously. Yeah. Primarily for burglars after leaving items of value in the house.
In the house, yeah.
Like, they would just grab anything
and go. Yeah. Like, I feel like after, like, especially if, like, they just, like, killed somebody, like, you're gonna take, like, whatever, like, you were just touching, because obviously you said there was, like, things that were, like, touched,
right,
and you're gonna get the fuck out of there.
Right, they didn't take anything. They took the marriage license, which...
Makes no sense.
Yeah.
Well, right now it makes no sense.
Right.
Does it make sense?
It does.
Okay.
The further he said, whoever shot his daughter had fired directly into her chest and at close range. And had taken the trouble to muffle the shot, so he was suggesting that the killing was deliberate and not only accidental, which obviously makes
sense. Sounds like it to me.
Yes. So, eventually, Mayer, which is the old detective, retired, and a new detective was assigned to the case, and told Nels that he was unable to follow up on Mayer's notes and did not think that any new leads would emerge. Nels was rebuffed again in 1993 when he offered to pay for DNA testing on the evidence from the murder, now that the technology was available, because back then it wasn't.
Right.
He was told that the police had to have a suspect in order to proceed with testing. Now I'm going to backtrack and introduce you to a person who will become a suspect. So her name was Stephanie Lazarus.
Oh, a girl?
Yeah. Who is she?
I don't know why I wasn't expecting it to be a girl.
Right. Well, because you don't, because they kept saying it was like a burger. Yeah. Okay. So.
Wait, is a girl murderer? Okay, go on.
Okay.
Sorry.
John. So I'm going back to tell you how she is involved.
Like, fits in. Right. Okay.
So while John was an undergraduate student at the University of California, Los Angeles, UCLA, from 1978 to 1982, he occasionally dated Stephanie Lazarus, a fellow Destra Hall resident and a political science major from Simi Valley, California. They both were avid athletes. They played on, you know, basketball teams, whatever.
Sure.
Stephanie would, like, steal his clothes and, like, when they showered and, like, and would take photographs of him naked when they slept, while he slept.
Cool.
John.
That's what I do.
Yeah. I mean.
Weird, but okay.
John never considered their relationship as anything more than, quote, necking and fooling around, end quote. And they had sex for the first time after he graduated. But, like, he didn't think anything really of it. He then went on to get a job, and she applied to the city's police academy and became a uniformed officer with the LAPD in 1983. Mm-hmm. In court, he later testified that they had sex, quote, 20 to 30 times between 1981 and 1984, but she was never his girlfriend.
It was like a hookup.
Right. At one point during this time period, Stephanie threw John a surprise party on his 25th birthday, unaware that he had been dating other women or that he had developed a serious relationship with Sherry. When she learned that he was seriously involved with Sherry, Stephanie was obviously, like, distraught. She wrote in, like, her journal. Well, she actually wrote this to John's mother. Quote, "I'm truly in love with John, and the past year has really torn me up." She wrote that in August of 1985. Quote, "I wish it didn't end the way it did, and I don't think I'll ever understand his decision," end quote. In her own journal, she wrote, quote, "I really don't feel like working. I found out John is getting married." depressed, Stephanie then visited the John at his condo, and then the two had sex to, quote, "give it closure," John testified years later. for what he says was only one time before Sherry's death. Later that night, Stephanie awoke a fellow officer she roomed with to commiserate the, like, that she, like, had sex with him. A little bit weird. Yeah.
I don't think that's what I would do, but go off, sis.
Yeah, whatever. So, during Sherry and John's engagement, Stephanie brought her skis to their apartment that John shared with Sherry and asked him to wax them. And, like,
yo,
this
can
is
you
just,
wax,
like,
my skis?
Yeah, it's a weird, like, side story, but, like, it's just kind of how, like, Sherry knew about Stephanie type of thing.
Okay.
This is the only way she knew about her, because Sherry obviously objected to it, but John complied. And he waxed her skis.
That sounds like I such know. A fucking euphemism. Like,
I, like, paused too, yeah. And I just didn't mean to. Like, it genuinely
it just
was.
It sounded so weird. Can you wax my skis?
Sherry obviously felt that this was a little strange, since at the time she went there, Stephanie was dressed in flattering workout clothes. So after Stephanie left, Sherry asked if their relationship was truly over. John, wow, pause. Okay, sorry. John convinced her that the two, were just friends, and then a few days later, Stephanie returned to pick up the wax skis in her uniform and armed after he had left her work. So when the only person who was there was Sherry. Sherry was unnerved by these visits and pleaded with John to tell Stephanie to stop coming by. And John said that there was nothing to their relationship and that she should just ignore Stephanie. According to Nels, I'm assuming it's Nels, like it's N-E-L-S, so.
N-E-L-S, Nels.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Stephanie later visited John at her, visited Sherry at her office to tell her that things were not over between her and John, and told Sherry, "If I can't have John, no one else will," shortly before her death. That's, like, the most common,
why,
like,
the fuck, like, could you imagine?
Like, isn't that insane?
Could you imagine?
Yep.
It's like so much so not being able to just get the fuck over somebody that you're like, if no one else can have him,
right?
Like,
yeah,
like what the fuck, like, yep. What a psycho.
She's yeah. So that happened shortly before her death, and Sherry again confided in her. So she said that, and then shortly before her death, Sherry confided in her dad again that Stephanie was stalking her on the street. I've been calling them fiancés, but they were married.
Well, they had a marriage license.
Right. I kept saying her fiancé, but it's her husband. They were married in November of 1985. So they, like, just got married.
Yeah.
Let's keep talking about what happened. So, now I'm gonna, like, move past the murder. We already talked about it. I'm gonna talk about Stephanie, Oscar, and his friend are fighting. Sorry.
Then I don't think they're very good friends.
No. So I'm gonna, like, talk about Stephanie and what happened to her after the murder.
Okay.
So In the meantime...
Did you say Heather before?
No, I said Stephanie.
Why did I hear Heather?
I don't know.
Like, the first time you said her name, I thought you said Heather.
I'm pretty sure it's Stephanie.
Maybe I'm
And the only reason I say Stephanie is because I know a Stephanie, so it's not like...
Yeah, it's, yeah, maybe
like,
crazy.
I wouldn't... Okay. Anyway.
Sorry. No, because you've been saying Stephanie this whole time, but then right. I was like, did she say Heather?
It's like that one time, that one case where I said the lady's name, told the wrong name the entire time.
Half the episode.
Yeah.
It was different. Yeah.
No, this one's definitely Stephanie.
Oh, okay.
But, like, in my notes, I call them by their last name, but I don't like calling them by their last name, so I use their first name when I talk.
Right.
But, anyway, so in the meantime, while she's not a suspect at this time.
Okay.
She continued working with the LAPD and then went on to start her own private investigation firm called Unique Investigations. Excuse me, sorry.
Very unique. They investigate, right. They also kill. Okay, keep going.
Possibly. Who knows?
Suspect.
Not yet. Not at this time.
Oh, not a suspect.
In 1987, she earned medals, including one gold, at the World Police and Fire Games in San Diego.
Oh, shit.
And in 1993, after stints in the department's drug abuse, resistance as education and internal affairs divisions, she became a detective. So then 3 years later, she married a fellow officer and adopted a daughter. And then she became an instructor at a police academy. So she was teaching the youth of how to become a police
officer. Gotcha.
And this is just a side note, John eventually remarried as well, but that's not important. So, now we're fast-forwarding to late 1990s, after DNA testing had become more prominent. The LAPD had formed a new unit that had looked at cases through forensic evidence collected from the cold case department to determine whether they had any potential for new leads through DNA testing.
Mm-hmm.
Among the... I don't know why my throat is so dry. Among the evidence seen... as likely to do so, was evidence collected from Sherry's case. However, it was not until 2004 when another criminal analyst named Jennifer Francis was able to analyze it.
Okay.
So they kind of were like, they started this new unit in 1990, like in the late 1990s,
mm-hmm.
but because they were taking so many so much evidence from cold cases, they weren't able to, like, process anything until
right.
2004. some of the evidence from Sherry's case, including what might have contained the suspect's DNA, was missing. And, having been collected in 1993 by another detective.
Oh, yeah, that sounds good. Mm-hmm. Do you want a drink besides that?
No, I'm good.
Oh, okay.
I think it's because I'm talking so fast that I'm just inhaling.
Stuff.
I do that a lot.
Yeah, it's okay.
So anyway, the DNA was missing. Ooh, sorry. Francis did not find any matches in the combined DNA index system database, but did find that the saliva in it had come from a female. Undermining the initial detective's burglary theory. Several years later, Francis claimed that unusually, she had access to not just the sample, but the entire case file, which had been given to her to help her decide which samples to use to analyze. So she was, instead of just getting samples, she got the whole case.
Okay.
Upon discovering that the biter and likely perpetrator was a female. That is a funny way to put it. And perpetrator was a female, she reviewed it and came across a report of a, quote, third-party female, end quote, who allegedly harassed the victim at her job and residence before the murder. So she is the only one who, like, picked up on that and decided to say something about it.
Hmm.
So Francis asked the detective supervising her if this woman had been investigated, to which he supposedly responded with, quote, oh, you mean the LAPD detective? End quote. He elaborated that the woman, a former girlfriend of the hold on, I'm sorry. A former girlfriend of the victim's husband was, in fact, a current LAPD detective, but, quote, she's not part of this. And he insisted that the case was a simple burglary that the department had long concluded. No other detectives would pursue the case, and the evidence went back into the files. Do you see why this is 13 pages long?
Yeah. I get it now.
By 2009, crime in LA had declined enough from its earlier levels that detectives began looking back into cold cases. So, two detectives named Jim Natal and Pete Barbara reviewed Sherry's file and found it interesting enough to be worth pursuing. Because the DNA test pointed to be a female suspect, they decided that the burglary theory was invalid, and they would have to start from the beginning.
So they were like, you know what, it's a girl?
Right.
Fuck it.
No burglars are girls, so let's just start from the beginning.
Yeah. How could a girl ever burglarize?
Right, why not? Start Come over. On, sexist.
Wow, let's I'm gonna start go burglarizing right. everyone ever well. Suspected me.
They looked at the case as a murder, and with the burglary staged to throw off the police off the trail. Many aspects of the crime were improbable for a break-in, especially one committed in daylight. Cherry's jewelry box, an inviting target for a burglar, was in plain view atop of her dresser and had not been touched. The condo was in the middle of a gated complex, surrounded by other units from which burglars would have expected to be easily observed. The front door had an alarm warning and had not been open. So, and it might have been, putative? I don't know if that's a word. Sometimes I type things and I think that they're words, but...
What is?
P-U-T-A-T-I-V-E. I really don't think that's a word.
It doesn't sound, but also I could be wrong. So.
It is a word because there's no red squiggly line under Wait, it, but...
Spell it again?
P-U-T-A-T-I-V-E. I definitely read it in one of my articles.
Putative.
And
putative.
What does it mean?
Generally considered or reputed to be.
Okay, so the burglar... So like it was just basically expected that the burglars thought nobody was going to be home.
Okay.
Inside, a key aspect of the crime scene was also inconsistent with the burglar theory. Atop of the stairs, there was a stack of stereo equipment atop a VCR. I'm sorry, I'm coughing like crazy right now. Actually, I'm really not, but... So there was a stack of stereo equipment and a VCR. If there was a struggle between Sherry and her attacker, if it had begun upstairs and then continued downstairs, the stack would have likely been knocked down the stairs and scattered. It made more sense to assume that it had been stacked afterwards, when an actual burglar would have fled the scene immediately after shooting. Me in my head, I'm like, a burglar would have stolen all of that equipment.
Yeah.
But, I mean, who am I? The forensics reinforced this theory. On a record player atop the stack was a thumb-shaped blood stain. It had no print, suggesting whoever left it was wearing gloves to avoid leaving an identification. But the blood was Sherry's, suggesting that the equipment had been stacked after the struggle and the shooting. It had been left behind, the detectives realized, to make the crime look like something other than it really was.
Okay. I guess that kind of makes sense.
Right. From the four bound volumes of the case file, they developed a list of five female suspects. Natal was taken aback when John told him over the phone that Stephanie was a police officer. By then, Stephanie had been already, obviously, as we know, promoted to a detective and was working an art theft case as part of the commercial crimes division.
Okay, then.
So, because she was a cop, a detective. And she was one of the only two detectives in the nation on the full-time unit devoted to that specialty of, like, art and, like, crime.
How the fuck do you get into that?
Yeah, I don't know.
But, like, whatever, okay.
She had gained some local media attention because she had, her and her partner had recovered a statue stolen from, like, a place called Carthay? Circle. If you know anything about me,
Circle.
If you know anything about me, I cannot spell and I cannot speak. So, there we go.
I love that we're doing a podcast.
Yeah. So, basically, I'm trying to. I don't want to like. Okay. Basically, she goes on and on to a newspaper. She goes on and on saying that. Yeah. To better understand the field of art, she began learning to paint, and off the job, she worked with the Women's Police Officer Association to organize childcare, so she was just, like, this great lady. Yeah. Since she was, like, this great lady and still with, still with the police department, both Natal and Barbara realized that they had to proceed carefully, but they still ranked her at least a promising one of the five suspects that they had in their mind. Since that they read in the files that she and John had ended any sort of relationship that they had the summer before the murder. Right. So, soon... their investigation eliminated all but one other woman. The other woman was a former co-worker of John who had some disputes. I mean, sorry, a former co-worker of Sherry who had some disputes with her, but was eliminated by a collected DNA sample from her.
Okay.
So with only Stephanie left, they kept the investigation closely guarded to themselves. Because not only was she working with the Silworth of Force, her husband was with them. he was also the detective, but she also had so many other friends in, you know, so they could have also tipped her off. if she was the killer, she could have improved her defense if she was tipped off.
Right.
And if she were not, they could have unintentionally smeared a fellow officer. Blah, blah, blah. So while they were working the investigation, they only referred to her as, quote, number five. So, like, they would not bring her up as, like, anything. Just, like... stupid.
I mean,
And they would only work on the case after hours or behind closed doors, and they developed cover stories to explain why they wanted to look at personal records from one particular officer from 20 years ago.
So they were, like, trying to, like, keep it, like, under
Right, they wraps. Literally did not want anyone to know. Right.
Which, I mean, I guess...
I understand, but, like, to me, I'm comparing, because LA and like, New York City are, like, I would assume relatively comparable.
Similar, yeah.
If you would investigate one detective in the NYPD... If you're investigating one detective, I can promise you that he would not find out. If you're in, like, one department, person, like, you know what I'm saying?
Like, how many precincts are there in New York City?
Right, so, like, I can't imagine that, like, why would she would know?
Well, but I think it's more not that, like, other police are, like, that, like, that it has anything to do with her figuring it out. I think it probably has more to do with so that the media didn't get a hold of it. And then which be like, the LAPD's investigating one of their own and they're still right. working on the force.
Right,
like,
which, that makes sense, I feel
like that's more like...
Which, yeah.
That'd be my assumption.
Which makes the most sense, but I don't know. So the detectives obviously began looking into other aspects of her life during the mid-1980s. Another detective recalled that at the time, most LAPD officers preferred a .38 as their backup or off-duty carry gun. Is that how you refer to it?
What?
Like so it's like .38? Would you refer to that as a .38?
It's a .38.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know anything about guns.
That's the size of the bullet. It's a caliber.
What do I know? so that's how their backup, that is their backup or off-duty gun. In fact, they are required to purchase only weapons compatible with the Federal Plus P ammunition that had been used in the murder. Definitely. So that's the only...
Well, that should have been like a fucking...
Yeah. State and departmental records showed that Stephanie had indeed owned a Smith & Wesson Model 4938. So it was Model 4938 caliber at the time of the murder, and reported it stolen to the Santa Monica police, but not to her own department's armoire. Is that what you call it? Yeah. No. Armory.
I was going to say.
Armoire is like what you put clothes in.
Yeah. Like a dresser.
So she reported it stolen to the police, but not to like the armory, which is like kind of crazy. 13 days after the murder. Since the location where Stephanie had reported it stolen was near a popular pier, they had assumed that she had thrown the gun into the Pacific Ocean. Without the weapon, DNA would be the only definite way to connect Stephanie to the crime. Natal and Barbara theorized that from their experience, the only way an LAPD officer, like, well, how they think an LAPD officer would commit the murder, it would have to be on their day off. Nobody would know.
Right, yeah.
And then...
I feel like that just makes sense.
Right. I feel like at any job that would make sense.
Yeah, I'm not going to go commit somebody on the clock.
Stupid. Departmental records showed that Stephanie had indeed been off the day that Sherry was killed. Officers would have known better to use their duty gun, since it would have been disposed of after the crime, and then penalties for losing your duty gun were severe. So obviously it would make sense that she used her backup gun. Lastly, a working patrol officer would know just how to do just enough to make a crime scene look like it was an interrupted burglary.
Okay.
So she knew just enough what to do.
Yeah. I guess the person to commit like a perfect quote unquote crime would be somebody like
right.
that's experienced.
Oh yeah, has seen crimes and yeah, it makes sense. So Nels, which is her dad, obviously, told the new detectives about Stephanie's continued contact with his daughter, which had not been in the files, despite him mentioning it frequently to Mayer and Hooks during interviews, realizing that Stephanie was now their prime suspect. Because she was their prime suspect, the detectives informed their superiors and arranged a discreet way to collect voluntary discarded DNA from her. Which,
so
if you
like
don't know,
tissues in the garbage.
Correct.
And stuff on coffee cups.
Right. Knowing that they could do so without having to get a warrant, which would let Stephanie know she was under investigation.
It's so funny because that, like, you think that shit only happens in, like, the movies. Where it's like, they give you water and, like, then they take the cup out of the garbage.
No, like, but this is, like, out of a movie. Like, they followed her while she was off duty running errands, and she discarded a cup from which she was drinking into a garbage, and then a police officer
retrieved
it.
Right, that's what I'm saying. Like, that's, like, when they take, like, gum out of the garbage
right,
and
that's,
shit.
Yep,
like,
that's exactly what they did. And the sample was taken from it, which matched the DNA on the bite mark from Sherry. So, the supervisor, I promise you, this is very long, but it's fine. Whatever, we're having a good time.
I'm here for it.
The supervisor at the Rob Bubb, who was the homicide detective supervisor, began letting his senior officers know, all the way up to the chief, William Bratton, know of the case, along with the senior prosecutors from the LA County District Attorney's Office. So he's basically, they're letting literally everyone else know besides her, because, like, they know
right.
how, like, what's gonna happen. It was also transferred to the Robbery Homicide Division, which handled many of the department's high-profile cases, including the Art Theft Bureau, where Stephanie herself worked. Her arrest was planned carefully. The day of her arrest was in June of 2009. They So, after being briefed on a search warrant, they were told that would be executed outside of the city, but wait. So, a bunch of officers went, and they were briefed on this search warrant that they told would be executed outside of the city, but with few details beyond that. So, they did not know that they were executing a search warrant on a fellow officer.
Got it.
They went to wait near Stephanie's home.
I feel like that was, like, such, like, a hard, like conflict of interest.
Especially almost. Because, like, police officers, like, they take it to the chat. Like, they it's their brothers and sisters. Like,
yeah.
It's crazy. A short time later, detectives from the RHD, which is the Robbery Homicide Division, who had been selected for the lack of personal collection to Stephanie, called her from the lockup at Parker's Center. So, like, basically, they called her and said, hey, we need your help with something, to, like, bring her into the department's headquarters, knowing that she would have to surrender her gun to enter.
Gotcha.
So, this would limit her possibility of, like, violently resisting.
Right.
Or realizing that she's a prime suspect.
Right.
After Stephanie checked her gun in, she entered the interrogation room, and then they explained that this was really about some loose ends that they were trying to tie up about Sherry's case, since her name had come up in the investigation. They claimed that they wanted a private setting because while John was an old boyfriend, Stephanie had been long married to someone else, and they did not want her private life to be the subject of office gossip. They knew that they would have to tread carefully since Stephanie herself was aware of all of the police techniques, obviously, yeah. And her right to silence and legal counsel, which she could invoke at any time. So they rambled and digressed from the subject lines at times. Sometimes they discussed unrelated police business, but they eventually came back to Sherry. Stephanie claimed to recall little due to the intervening years, but gradually revealed more and more knowledge, including her slight acknowledgments to the visits of John at John's condo, and a specific encounter at Sherry's office, until she accused her colleagues of considering her a suspect. The detectives mentioned it was possible that they had her DNA evidence from the crime scene and they requested DNA samples from Stephanie. Stephanie declined and then left the room. She was shortly after arrested and charged with murder. Once she was arrested, they then began their search of her home and her car.
Right.
In her house, they found her journal from the mid-1980s, which this was 2009, so...
What the fuck did you keep
that
for?
That's impressive. with numerous mentions of her love for John and her anger over her engagement to Sherry, and no mention of her gun being stolen, which kind of weird. If yeah. you're a cop and your gun was stolen, I would be freaking the fuck out.
Say something. Yeah.
Her computer showed that she had searched the internet for Sherry's name on several occasions during the late 1990s. As detectives had imagined, many LAPD officers were stunned that at the idea that Stephanie might have murdered someone. Fellow detectives recalled her as vivacious and supportive. Others sometimes recalled her that her behavior when angry had led to... Oh. That's kind of mean. sometimes when I write things, I don't realize how mean they are.
Like, what you're writing.
Yeah. It says, although some also recalled that her behavior when angry had led some of them to refer to her as Spazarus behind her back, because her name was Lazarus, Stephanie Lazarus.
Wow, what is that? That's third so grade? Jesus Christ.
So after her arrest, Stephanie was allowed to retire early from the LAPD, She was held in L.A. County Jail. A bail hearing was not held for almost 6 months. Judge Robert J. Perry surprised both sides when he set the bail amount at $10 million in cash.
Jesus yeah. Christ.
Well above what the defense had suggested and more than twice what the prosecutors had proposed.
So they were just like, he was like, you know what? Fuck you both.
Yeah.
You're not getting out of here. Yep.
He said the case against Lazarus was very strong, and thus she might well be at risk to flee the country or obtain weapons through her husband. Stephanie's lawyer, Mark Overland, said the judge did not understand the case well and contrasted that the high figure with the $1 million set for Robert Blake and Phil Spector when they were charged for murder. He's comparing it to another, murder. Case. Yeah.
That it was, higher than, this person's case.
Yeah. And then several months later, her brother claimed that she was not receiving adequate treatment for unspecified cancer while in treatment.
Right.
Now, that wasn't really, noted anywhere else, that if she did have it, if she didn't,
so, like, it we don't could really be, know. Could not be.
Yeah. In October, her lawyer moved to have the entire case dismissed on the grounds that the initial investigation should have identified Stephanie as a suspect, but failed to do so. In support, he cited missing aspects of the original file, such as recordings of interviews, Sherry's blood toxicology report, as well as a polygraph test John allegedly failed. The notion noted that Nels believed Stephanie was a suspect at the time of the murder, and his ensuing efforts to get the LAPD to take this theory seriously. So because of this failure, he argued that Stephanie's due process rights had been adversely affected since the quality of evidence had been degraded over interviewing of 23 years. So he's basically saying that because Nels was, saying she did it for 23 years, that her, due process rights were, affected.
Or, whatever, yeah.
Which is... He also argued that the truth in evidence provisions in the California Constitution required that the long delay in bringing charges, which adversely affected the quality of evidence, might have otherwise allowed him to make a better case, that there were other suspects or that evidence against Stephanie was not solid as the prosecutors claimed, should have been considered significantly negligent. So, basically, he's saying that, they brought such strong evidence against Stephanie that they couldn't,
say anything against it.
Right. For example, he said a witness could have corroborated the prosecution's account for the confrontation between Sherry and Stephanie at the hospital. So, he's saying that a witness who could have corroborated Stephanie's story.
Right.
About what happened between her and Sherry at the hospital had died in 2000.
Okay.
So because so much time had lapsed in between the charges being pressed, he can't get enough evidence to help prove her.
Right.
Prosecutors argued in response that it was required to apply federal standards, which under which such a delay could only be considered prejudicial. So, prejudicial if it has shown to be intentional. So, basically he's saying they only could throw it out if it was intentional.
Okay.
And the judge agreed and let the case proceed. So, basically, screw that.
Right.
Following that denial, her lawyer then moved to squash the search warrants that had been executed on the home vehicle. He argued that they were based on stale information that did not sufficiently establish nexus between the place's search and the likelihood of finding evidence there. Stephanie had not moved to her present residence until 1994, 8 years after the murder, and the affidavit in support of the warrant did not provide any reasons why evidence might be found there. Um, At the time of the affidavit, the judge claimed that he was even deceptive while submitting the detective asserting that the murder weapon might have been found, that the weapon might have been found there when the Natal and Barbara had already theorized that she had reported stolen and like threw it in the lake. So he was like, that's silly that they would say it might be at the house if they were saying it was thrown in the water.
Thrown in the lake, right.
The judge admitted he was, quote, uncomfortable admitting some of the seized evidence, in particular from Stephanie's personal computers and others and other electronic storage devices at her home, since either she had not had them or they had not existed in the time of Sherry's death. But he had felt since she had an experienced judge had issued the warrants, the good faith exception to the exclusionary rule applied. So just because a good judge did these warrants, he was like, they'll stick. I'm just gonna keep going.
Yeah.
Because he just kept pulling out motions and
like
motions.
Just shit to
yeah.
Like, yeah.
So his next motion, heard in late 2010, was sought to bar the use of the statements she made during her videotaped interrogation at her like arrest.
Mm-hmm.
He argued that per the Garrity warning, usually given to government employees under investigation, says that California law compelled her to answer questions as a police officer or face disciplinary action for refusing to cooperate with an investigation, entitling her to automatically use immunity for those answers. So basically, because she's a cop, she has to help the investigation.
Right.
So she has immunity because she has to help. It doesn't make sense, but
okay.
To me. The prosecution argued that only applied where there was an active administrative proceeding, which had not started yet because she was not arrested yet. So she, like, since she wasn't arrested, she didn't have immunity.
Okay. That's so confusing, but
yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
It doesn't make sense, but it's just like a...
Like a blip in like the...
Right. The because
like legality
she was a cop.
Of it, right.
Right. The judge agreed with them on the point that the lawyer's argument was overboard and like it's just like a plea. A year later, the judge denied the last of Mark, the lawyer's significant pretrial motions. The criminalist had used a mini filer, which is a new product to type Stephanie's DNA, and he argued that it was significantly different from previous technology, and that she was entitled to a Fry hearing, which was to determine whether its rights were significant. Was to determine whether her results were sufficient scientific validity or admissible. So, like, if it was really...
Right.
You know. Perry ruled that it was just another form of the PCR method commonly used for DNA test samples. So, the trial began in 2012. The prosecutors argued that Stephanie's motive for murder was her jealousy over Sherry's relationship with John. In his opening argument, prosecutor Shannon Prisby summed up the case as, quote, a bite, a bullet, a gun barrel, and a broken heart. That's the evidence that will prove to you that the defendant Stephanie Lazarus murdered Sherry Rasmussen.
A bite, a bullet, and a broken heart, babe.
Isn't that nice? That's
I'm gonna like get a... BBB tattooed on my fingers.
I don't
a
think
bite,
you should.
A bite, a bullet, oh, BBBH. But triple BH.
I don't know about that, but it's fine.
B to the third H. Right on my forehead.
This is unrelated, but I saw a TikTok of someone showing a tattoo, and it was, like, a V, and then, like, tally marks. And somebody was like, I asked this bitch what that tattoo means, and she goes, it's my, virginity scoreboard. And she, like, every time
oh my gosh, she gets, like, a tick?
Yeah. I don't know why that reminded me of that, but it did. Anyway. A highlight of the case was John's testimony. Several times he became emotional and he wept, particularly when recalling his courtship with Sherry. He allowed that having sex with Stephanie while engaged to his future wife was, quote, a mistake. In cross-examining the police detectives and other technicians who had originally investigated the killing, Mark stressed the original botched burglary theory and pointed to evidence, such as the similar burglary that happened thereafter, and that he claimed supported it. He also highlighted that the evidence that wasn't analyzed, such as the bloody fingerprint on the walls, and to suggest that suspects had not been adequately excluded from consideration. He questioned whether it could truly be inferred from the weapon used that it was Stephanie's lost gun, as 38s were in wide use. Since the DNA from the bite mark was central to the prosecution case, he attacked it vigorously, pointing to improper storage procedures and a hole in the tube that had left that... A hole the tube had left in an envelope that he said would have allowed Stephanie's DNA to have been added. So there was, like, a little hole.
Oh.
Basically, he's, like, grasping at straws here.
Yeah. Like, wait, what?
Yeah. During the 2 days in which he presented his case, Mark focused on the prosecution's case of a lovelorn Stephanie presenting friends of hers who denied that she was showing any signs of violence over her failed relationship with John. Experts from contemporary journals were offered as, opposite of, like, the journal that where she said, I can't live without him, basically. Were offered as evidence. Stephanie wrote in it of dating several men, different men, none of them John, and he reinforced his attack on the forensic evidence, calling his last witness a fingerprint expert who said some of the prints of the crime scene did not match those of Stephanie.
Okay.
Both the prosecution and the defense reiterated their themes in the closing arguments. After showing the jury of 8 women and 4 men, the photographs of beaten and bloodied Sherry, prosecutor Paul Nunez told them, quote, it wasn't a fair fight. This was prey caught in a cage fight with a predator. Overland dismissed the entire case as circumstantial and fluff and fill, quote, like he said, save for the compromised bite mark DNA sample. He moved for a mistrial after Nunez reminded the jurors that no alibi had been provided at the time of the murder, since the defendant's refusal to testify cannot be held against them. But then the judge denied it, saying that he did not take this as directly suggesting Stephanie herself had refused to testify. In March, several days after deliberation, Stephanie, then 52, was convicted of first-degree murder. Later that month, she was sentenced to 27 years to life in prison, and she is currently serving her sentence at the California Institution for Women in Corona. After credit for time served before her trial, she will be eligible for parole in 2034. So,
this bitch got crazy eyes. Did you look up a picture of her?
Yeah, isn't she scary looking?
She is fucking wild looking, bro. She's got such crazy eyes. Somebody should have known she was going to kill somebody. I know,
she's scary looking.
She's like...
Yep. She's scary. And then as it goes on, Nels, filed a lawsuit against, obviously, the LAPD. But his was dismissed, because the lawsuit he filed was because he offered to pay for DNA, for the DNA testing in 1992, and they didn't do it. Mm-hmm. And then another person filed a lawsuit, which was a whistleblower, which was the criminalist who found the case, okay. Jennifer Francis. She filed her suit in 2013, because she said, she brought it up to a detective and he didn't do anything. And so Nels's was dismissed. Hers was settled out and ended with a judgment in the city's favor, so she didn't win that.
Okay.
But yeah.
So she's still chilling in prison.
Right. Yeah. She filed an appeal and in 2013 with a different attorney named Donald. I'm trying to like squish it together. Mm-hmm. Named Donald Tickle. And they argued that. I know, it's not funny. They argued that the judge had erred in his rulings for the prosecution on all four pretrial motions that Overland had filed. Tickle argued that multiple things supported the defense arguments over those of the prosecution's, blah, blah, blah. he also attacked Perry's rulings limiting the defense's ability to put on evidence. Obviously, she didn't win it.
Yeah, I mean.
At the end of the day. So, yeah, she tried to appeal, but did not win. So, yeah.
So, a cop.
Basically, lover's quarrel, cop killed her, but got away with it because she was a cop. For 20 plus years.
Gross. I like how I was mad about 8 months before.
Right. Yeah, I was like, just wait.
Like, 20 or 5 years later.
It's more I can't tell if it's more because she was a female and they were trying to say it was a burglary and a male, or because she was a cop.
I think because it really didn't sound like anybody was, like, hush-hushing it.
Right. I don't think that, unless, like, in my, like, research, I didn't, like, point out or, like, I didn't find where, like, they were like, oh, yeah, that one detective knew it was her.
Yeah, I feel like you didn't hear that. I feel like it was more just, like, they were dead set on, like, this was a burglary gone wrong and only guys apparently burglarize houses.
And it could have been because of the timing and because of, like, the war on crime was so high.
Well, it kind of got swept under the rug.
Right, that they were like, let's just close this as fast as we can. Or, like, try to close this as fast as we can.
Like, one less case we have to fucking worry about.
Right. But, yeah. So that's all I have for you guys.
It's interesting. I never heard of that one before.
Yeah. My very long case for you. It took me a while to do
that. The tables have turned for that one. Because, listen, mine was an hour long, but we talked for 45 minutes in the front. Yours is an hour long. We talked for 3 minutes.
Right. Because I was like, I have to get right into it. I know I'm going to be.
Yeah.
But, you know. I actually researched this. This is a side note story about while watching Catfish. Do you know that's such an underrated show?
I love Catfish.
Fucking my favorite show ever.
Like it, the new Catfish, but I like the one with Max and Neve.
You don't like the new one?
I liked Max better than I liked Neve. So.
Oh. I don't mind it because I'm just like interested in that.
Yeah.
But I watch it every single week because Ronnie records it for me, and it's like one of the shows that I watch by myself while he's playing his little video games.
Gotcha.
So I look forward to it.
Checks out.
Makes sense. But yesterday I watched it by myself, so screw you, Ronnie. But that's my side note story for you guys. So.
How was Sing 2?
Oh, it was adorable.
Was it good?
It was cute. Okay. Yeah.
Because it kept coming up on there, and it's I wonder how it was.
Yeah, it was good. It was good. I watched the full thing and I didn't fall asleep, which is interesting because I was watching something else before that, which was, like, true crime related, and I was falling asleep. So, but I also think that, like, my brain needed a rest, and you know, like, sometimes you just, like, need to I think it was one of those.
Makes sense.
So, yeah. Alright, follow us on Instagram.
FIB Podcast.
Hit us up on Facebook.
Futuresbury Podcast.
Send us a Gmail.
Futuresbrightpod@gmail.com.
Should I just take the YouTube out of the TikTok?
Futuresbrightpod.
And catch
us. No, FIB Podcast.
Something like that.
One of the two.
Catch us next time, you know?
Yeah.
Alright.
Do that.
Peace out, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.